Now, if you were too old or too shy to pick up one of these A5 yellow sheets, there are still some there, and it would still be appropriate with these questions at the end of the sermon as well. We are now into our sixth Sunday in the sermon series on the epistles or letters in the New Testament. A brief recap. Most of the letters in the New Testament are written by Paul, that is the ones from Romans to Philemon, and the ones after that are by other people. So there's two groups to start off with. And in Paul's letters, there are different kinds of letters. Some are written from captivity when he was in prison. Last week we heard from Dave about Ephesians. That was one of the first letters in the captivity group. And today we hear about Philippians, or rather the letter to the church at Philippi. I don't know why it's called Philippians. I mean, we don't think of the church here as Ductonians, do we? Or Ducklington? Well, you know what I mean. So this is the church at Ducklington, and this is the letter to the Christians at Philippi. And it was written when Paul was in prison, either at Caesarea or in Rome, where he was under house arrest. So as I say, all the letters from Romans to Philemon are by Paul, roughly in chronological order. And just to root these in a date, Paul was executed in Rome probably in the year 67 AD. So just hold that in your mind. 67 AD was when Paul was executed in Rome, and so these letters would be before that. Now, from the book of Acts, we know that Paul was a very energetic character, always on the move. So for him, this grounding, this being put into prison, must have seemed like a disaster. But he did have access to papyri and ink and a scribe and or companion, so he wrote to the people he couldn't visit, and I imagine they wrote to him as well. It's what you do, isn't it? You're away on holiday, so you write some postcards home. Your sister is in hospital, so you write a newsy letter to cheer her up. You're working away from home, maybe at university or somewhere else, so you send emails or text messages or phone up or send letters or all of these things. If Paul hadn't been grounded, we wouldn't have got these letters. He would have preached several sermons and debated with others on several occasions, but his talks wouldn't even have been recorded. The letter to the church at Philippi gives us a snapshot of the church there at that point in time. Let's say about 61 AD. We don't know what it was like in 58 AD. We don't know what it was like in 62 AD. This is a snapshot of that particular time. And that's the problem with photos, isn't it? If you look at our display of photos here that was started about 2 years ago, Tom Foggett, bless him, has been doing a marvellous job and is still taking photos of people that come regularly to the church so that we can know their names. There was he took some last week, and these will be going up on the notice board soon. The idea is that we can know people's names, put names to faces. So it's an ongoing task, but of course we're trying to keep it up to date. But in fact, already, especially the children, they're out of date. We've got babies that are toddlers now, children that are teenagers, and the teenagers are now young men and young women. So, fortunately for the church at Philippi, their particular snapshot was rather a flattering one. It's a good picture of them. Paul is writing them a thank you letter because they have sent him gifts while he was grounded in prison. They also sent one of the church members, Epaphroditus, to bring the gifts to Paul. Now, on this yellow sheet, one of the questions I ask is, what sort of gift would be appropriate for someone in prison like Paul? Well, not a box of chocolates or flowers or fruit, and not, as I'm sure some would say, a crowbar or an iron file. This had to do with something that could travel over weeks or even months. Whatever it was something that brought him joy. He mentions this more than once. I thank my God every time I remember you, constantly praying with joy in every one of my prayers for all of you. He says he hopes to hear news of them and he hopes to visit them. in a verse following today's reading, he says, "It has been a great joy to me that even after all this time you have shown such interest in my welfare." It would be nice, wouldn't it, as a group of Christians, to be remembered for being a giving, generous church. And giving doesn't necessarily mean money. That helps, but sometimes it's the easy option. Just as important is giving time to people, friendship, hospitality, understanding, and sometimes just space and acceptance. The two readings we've had today, both the Gospel and the Old Testament, show us the generosity of God. And that spirit of generosity is evident today in our church porches, because people have brought what they have more than they need from their garden and have put it in the porches for you to help yourselves to. That spirit of generosity is something that we want to foster in our church. But back to the snapshot of Philippi. In the background of this letter, as those of you who have read the letter will know, we have the ongoing problems of the early church. Even amateur historians can see the big issue was, do non-Christians have to become Jews to be Christians? And it keeps coming up all the time. In their local paper or church magazine or The Door, whatever they had, these would have been the questions. Do we need to get new converts circumcised? Or shall we just ask them to observe enough Jewish laws not to upset the Jewish Christians? Paul and some of the other church leaders couldn't agree, and their disagreement was very public. Now, I expect some observers at the time would have looked at the early church and said to themselves, Christians, followers of Jesus of Nazareth, they made a good beginning, but they are really pulling themselves apart over these issues. They won't last into the second century AD, let alone the 20th or the 21st. It's a bit the same today, isn't it? If you look at the national press for the past decade or so, you can see that the church has been very publicly disagreeing for a long time. Here are some of the headlines I found from recent national papers. Church paint attacks, sectarian. Lambeth Diary, Anglicans in turmoil. Tough talking at the Vatican. C of E could back rebel US church. But will the church implode? Will it die away? Or if it does, in some quarters, will a renewed and different church emerge? Here's an interesting thought. I've got a cut in here from the property section of the Sunday Times last week. I'll read it out to you. It's about a church that's for sale. Outside it's a church. Inside it's a 5-bedroom house on 3 floors. It's £650,000 and it's to be found in Northumberland. A church for sale as a house. What if in 50 years' time, all the parish churches were sold as residential properties? Would the church survive? What would the church look like then? Let's take another look at the snapshot of the church at Philippi. Paul speaks warmly about several individuals, and here in our reading today, he names two women, Euodia and Syntyche, as fellow workers for the gospel, along with others like Clement and Timothy and Epaphroditus. Now, these two women that were mentioned were pillars of the church. He says that. And they had had a disagreement. Well, I say, thank goodness for that. It just shows that however good things look like on the surface, there are always underlying tensions or misunderstandings, and often this is just because we are human, not divine, not yet. We have to be patient with one another and with ourselves. couple of weeks ago, Bob referred to this book, Mike Ciaconelli, Messy Spirituality. It's in the church library, or if it's not there, it's because someone's already reading it. It's an invitation to be ourselves and to let God accept us in all our messiness. Messy spirituality. I want to take that a bit further and say that each and every church is a messy church. Not because they have craft and painting and sticking some Saturday mornings or in the holidays, but because we are broken pieces of humanity, trying to get some of it right some of the time. And amazingly, incredibly, God takes that messy church and lives in it and uses it to make his kingdom come on earth. And a final look at the snapshot. Paul writes to the Christians at Philippi, recognizing that they have had to suffer for the gospel as he did, and there may be more to come. In the account of Paul's visit to Philippi in Acts chapter 16, we read that although one influential merchant and her household were converted to the faith, Paul was later accused of creating a disturbance, and the Roman authorities beat him and his companion and put them in prison. This was the occasion when there was an earthquake and the prison fell apart and the prison jailer got scared and came and asked Paul what he should do to be saved. Maybe that antagonism had continued in Philippi after Paul left. It was a city on a busy trade route run by Romans for Romans, and the Romans weren't sympathetic to the Jews or what might have been seen as internal quarrelling and division. While I've been planning for this talk on Philippi, I've also been reading a book by our bishop, Bishop John. Now, this one's called Going to Church, A User's Guide. That's going to be in the library as well. If not today, soon. Bishop John, too, reassuringly talks about the church being less than perfect. And he suggests some more images for the church. I think recently we had the image of the church as a zoo. Well, the bishop suggests thinking of the church as a jazz band, improvising together, each person playing to their strengths. Or a carnival. Anyone can join in. Diversity and creativity are what we celebrate. But there is also a section in this book on the church as it might be, on it as it might become. And the title of that chapter in the book is 10 Things Worth Going to the Stake For. Paul was telling his fellow Christians in Philippi that they could expect opposition, hostility, danger, and maybe death. Paul was prepared for that. What about them? What about us? Have we got 10 things that we would consider worth going to the stake for? Have we got 3 things? Or even 1? Or anything we would consider worth going to the stake for? Worth dying for? But this is a letter of joy as well as realism. The two can go together. In a moment, I'm going to suggest we take a few moments' time to read again to ourselves those verses in Philippians. From chapter 4. And as we do so, Joe will play some reflective music. Thank you.